All right, here we go. All the opening lines. Hey, Wayne, how you doing, buddy? Good to see you.
Yeah, I'm going great. I've had a really interesting week. Quick Australian bush story that we've got a property in North New South Wales, and it's a school that was built in the late 1800s, and we really love it, but it is in the Australian outback, Australian bush, as we'd say. And the guy that takes care of our grass when we're not there, our lawn when we're not there, rang us yesterday and he said, I've got good news and bad news. The good news is the grass has all been cut back. The bad news is a big brown snake, which is, if you Google brown snake, is either the top one, two, or three most venomous snakes in the world. Said the bad news is I woke up a big brown snake, which now has gone inside your house.
Oh, my gosh.
So I said to my lovely wife, Libby, I said, I vote I'm not first in the door next time.
Here's the crazy thing. I just showed Rachel and Maddie a video that I came across of a guy sitting in his easy chair, and he's got his phone aimed at his ceiling fan. And what came down in the ceiling fan was a snake. And the snake is wrapped around the ceiling fan and is trying to get off. And so he's watching the snake stick its head out and trying to figure out a way. And of course it gets caught in the ceiling fan and the snake shoots out and lands on the guy's lap and he starts screaming. Now, had that been a brown snake, the whole screen would have gotten dark at the end of that because he would have just been dead. So,
well, that's the excitement of living down where we do. You get beautiful sunshine, you get lovely beaches, but from time to time, you've got to ask yourself the question, why do I live here and not Chicago?
Well, I tell you, I think a killer squirrel, I just watched him walk across the electric line out there. It's very scary. We have a lot of squirrels around here. So gathered up together, they could really do some damage. So anyway, I'm going to start off. So today we're going to talk about parents and swim parents. And so I'm going to start off by sharing an image. This will be our chat GPT segment for this week. In looking to market the new app, we're looking at ways that we can harness AI to help us create graphics and things like that. So I went into one of the AI image generators and I explained what a swim parent is, you know, that they sit around, they wait, they're waiting for their kids. So I said, can you create an image for me that represents a swim parent? And this is what I got. So apparently a swim parent at a swim meet, I don't know if it's a pom-pom over here or what, but he's a homeless man trying to figure out how to fold a piece of paper. He's got a friend next to him that somehow has a leg that's sticking in the middle. I don't really know what it is. So this is a swim parent as seen by AI. And so obviously we will not be using this, but that's what AI thinks a swim parent is at competitions. Now, before we get into everything, I'm going to stop obviously sharing that thing. So what I do want to show really quickly is that everything that we talk about today about parents, you can go to Wayne's website, and we're going to have this link in all the descriptions and the notes, that you can go and actually buy a course for only $49, where you can really go through in a deep dive into all of these subjects and much, much more, and really get to know who Wayne is and what he does. So we're going to put the link in. I do encourage you to go there. It's not a lot of money, and it can save your relationship between your children and yourself and your coaches and all that. It's just a little bit of knowledge about, you know, kind of how things are supposed to work. So I do encourage you to do that. And again, we'll put the link in. So very, very important. And all of this stuff that Wayne has created is incredible, but it's, you know, there's so much common sense to it. When you've been around long enough, when you're going through it for the first time as a parent, you have these understandings that you know best. And so the first thing we're going to do is go through the five biggest mistakes that parents make as age group and swim parents. And so the first one, giving technical advice to swimmers, particularly around swim meets. So Wayne, go ahead.
Well, this whole topic, you and I were chatting last week about the importance of this topic. So I mentor a group of coaches in New Zealand, and one of the parts of the mentoring, we do group meets and we do little groups where we come together and learn about technique, but they also have the opportunity to work one-on-one with me. And there was a two-week period where of the 10 coaches that I spoke to one-on-one, seven of them wanted to talk about issues with swimming parents, how to manage swimming parents, how to help swimming parents, how to tap into the energy of swimming parents. It's incredible that 10 people doing one-on-ones with me could have talked about anything, periodization, strength training, nutrition, coaching, anything. Seven of the 10 said, I want to talk about swimming parents and managing them more effectively. So I thought, man, this is screaming for a third 50 discussion for swimming coaches. So number one, giving technical advice to swimmers, particularly at meets. Great story someone said the other week. They said, Wayne, what do I do when my swimming parents give the kids 30 pieces of information, 30 race tips, when I've got a plan and I'm only giving them one piece of information on the day? And he said that his plan is 3 days out for a meet, they work on three things. 2 days out, they work on two things. On meet day, there's one message. Attack the turns, explode off the blocks, keep your technique long and strong. He said, but there's one piece of information, that's it, because I like to make it simple and clear. And he said, this kid goes down to marshalling, getting ready to race. And he said, I was there and I could hear mum there. It was everything. Okay, well, when you go to the blocks, step up, have a strong body presence, lots of breathing, hit the wall. Mum gave 50 pieces of information. This poor kid is then, what do I do? Is it kick? Is it swim? So number one tip for parents to start off with, don't give technical advice. Even if you're a swimmer, don't give technical advice around meets.
So I'm looking all over the place. So I'm listening to everything you're saying because I'm looking at two different things right now. One is a long string of texts from one of my best friends that was presented with complaints from one parent. And the parent had compiled a 140-page document based on where he stood during practice in correlation to her swimmer. And so long story short, he had to meet with HR. He had to meet with, he was in fear of losing his job. And then he gave his side of the story and showed videos that he had filmed on the swimmer and help that he had given. So he's fine, only he's incredibly discouraged that he knows now that when he's on deck, he's being not only judged, but documented everything that he does. And so it's scary. I mean, I congratulated him on giving this person something to live for. He was there. They were obsessed with him. I mean, he basically had a stalker. Okay. Parents, please stop. I mean, goodness gracious. Now, I've spent the last 5 years working on our app, which involves the parents. And so I do want to address this very quickly. I'm going to show something right here, which is the app. Okay. And so this particular video was filmed by a parent in the stands. Okay. So you have an incredible part of the process. So, and we've built the app around this. So the swimmer here is Andy Mures. She's an Israeli Olympian. This is the finals of the Tier Pro meet recently. She'd had a great swim. And so her mom had sent this to me, and so we looked at it. And so we get in there and we get to analyze her strokes and her data. And, you know, oh goodness, I pulled up the wrong video. There's no data in this one. Oh, look what I clicked on. So anyway, goodness, I'm going to click on this other one and we go in. So this is live presentation. Okay. Here's all her strokes and her data and all this stuff. Okay. So why do we want the parents involved in this when we know that they are going to overstep their bounds? Well, look, the parents are already filming. The parents are already filming. If you film within the app, the coach automatically gets that. And now the coach with the data can become a better coach. But parents, you have to know your role. You can be involved. You can be part of the process. But when you take the information and you say something that is contradictory or different than what the coach says, you get involved in a process and now you create confusion, which is exactly what Wayne just said. I will tell you, and you know, again, whether you respect me or not, I don't really know or care, but as a coach, by the time my swimmers get to a meet, I say one thing to them when they go to the blocks, and that's go pick a fight. That's it. It's from Braveheart. I say go pick a fight, but with the understanding, be nice to them before the race, be nice to them after the race, but when the gun goes off, you pick a fight because you're there to react, not think. If you're thinking of 50 different instructions and contradictory instructions, you are paralyzed and you cannot do anything that you need to do. So parents, let one message go through the person that you're paying to coach your swimmer. Let them take it. And you get involved by getting the Go Swim app, filming them, and giving it to the coach. That's my commercial and my rant. And now back over to Wayne.
But you're right, Millsy, that I try to say to parents, all that matters is the potential of your child. So your child says, you know what? I want to get better at this. Okay. Then the three of us, the child, the parent, and the coach, are all focused on one thing. How do we help the child be all that they choose to be? How do we understand what their dream is? And how do we let that happen? And if you're putting a company together, you don't say, right, I'm going to have somebody who's going to be CEO and manage everything, and somebody who's going to build the things here, and they're both going to do each other's job. So the CEO is going to go on the shop floor and build stuff, and the talented craftsman on the floor doesn't go up to the CEO and try to run the office and do the legal stuff and do the finance. You know, a partnership works really well when people go, I know what I got to do. I'm really good at it, and let's do it in the interest of producing something wonderful. Same concept. What's a coach's job? Help the kids technically, tactically, strategically, physically, mentally, all those things. What's the job of a swimmer? Do the best they can. Turn up and just give me all you've got today, whatever that might be. What's the job of a parent in the partnership? Teach values and virtues and character and time management, independence, responsibility, work as part of the team. And if everyone's doing their role and everyone's focused on that beautiful goal of helping that child to be all they choose to be, it goes really well. Where, though, you start to have parents trying to coach or you have kids trying to – when you've got crossover between the roles and there's no clear delineation of who does what and when, it completely crashes and falls apart. That's a really sad story you told me before about the swimmer and the swimmer's parent and the coach taking notes. But unfortunately, my friend, there's been several incidences of that I'm aware of, not just in the US, but in other parts of the world. The pressure on the coaches is considerable, and it's very sad.
Well, this is the other thing that everybody has to understand. If you want one-on-one attention for your swimmer, hire me. Hire a teacher, okay? Hire someone to spend time with your swimmer. Again, my rates for lessons now in Northwestern, because I have to pay pool rent, it's $200 an hour. You'll get one-on-one attention. More than likely, you'll get the attention that you deserve. If you're in with 40 other swimmers, guess what? You're not going to get that attention. You're going to get an overall general sort of thing. If you want that attention, pay for it. Tell your coach you want special attention. I guarantee you they will accept your money. Yeah. I guarantee you they will accept your money. But don't sit there and throw your kid in with 40 other kids and expect that they are going to get special attention. Everybody pretty much gets the same. I'll tell you who gets, you know, what's the old saying, Wayne, is that you have favorites. And I always said, yeah, you're right. I have favorites. My favorites are the kids that do everything I say when I ask them to do it. What are you going to do?
The kids are as committed as you are. That's the dream. It's all based around levels of motivation and passion. You see enthusiastic kids, you get excited too.
That's it. You can't help it. It's human nature. If people agree with you and they go along with you and they work with you, you're going to like them. If they're antagonistic, if they're not listening to what you do, if they don't do what you ask them to do, you know, eventually, and I've told coaches this, sometimes you just got to give up because you're taking away you're taking time away from the kids that are responding to you to give attention to those that aren't, and that's bad for the majority of the team. So yeah. One of the next things is doing everything for the swimmers. Oh my gosh, the stories that I hear from my wife.
Okay. I was talking to the coaches the other day about this, and it was great that I do a bit of a routine with swimming parents. And I turn up quite often. I get asked by clubs or by groups to talk to swimming parents. And I say, who did morning practice this morning? And the hands will go up around the room. I'll say, okay, I've got a camera hidden in all of your rooms right around. And they're all sort of looking, where's this guy going? And I said, this is what I saw in your house this morning with my secret spy cameras. Ready? This is what I saw. At 4:30 a.m., the alarm went in Mum's room. Mum got up and she put some coffee on, had a little bit of toast or something like that, and then went into the swimmer at 5 o'clock, knocked on the door and said, sweetheart, darling, time to go to workout. The kid doesn't even respond. Mum goes and packs their swimming bag, puts their dry towel, which Mum had hung up the night before, make sure there's two pairs of goggles, make sure they've got a swimsuit and a spare suit, fins are in there, all that sort of stuff, packs the bag, puts it near the front door, goes into the kid's room, says, come on, sweetie, we've got to go to practice. Kid says, I don't want to go to practice. It's too early. It's too cold. So Mum says, come on, darling. Come on, sweetheart. I've made you a cocoa. I've made you a nice hot chocolate. They put their tracksuit over their shoulders to keep them nice and warm, the lovely darlings. Wow. And they come out. The kid sits at the table like this, has their hot cocoa. Mum's really excited. Goes out the car. Kid falls asleep in the side of the car when they get there. They get to practice. Mum gets out and carries the bag into them. And all the parents are going, how did he know that? That was our house this morning. And then I say to the parents, do you know what we need is independence. Yeah. We need the kids to drive their own destiny. We need the kids to take ownership over their own practice and their own swimming career. We need you basically to do nothing for them. Now, we know why you do it, but we need you to do less so that they take ownership and responsibility. So stop hanging up their wet towels. Stop emptying their water bottles. Stop hanging up their suits. Teach them how to do it because they then take ownership. And confidence comes from knowing. Knowing comes from doing. Giving them and showing them how to do things helps them grow in confidence. So, yeah, it's great. It's a great exercise for those of you who are coaches who are listening and watching the show is play that game with your parents. Just say, yeah, I know what it looked like in your house this morning. And then teach them and show them how to do the exact opposite.
You're like Santa Claus. You see them when they're sleeping, which is really creepy, by the way. But anyway, I mean, I think back on my parents, you know, it's hard not to personalize your own experiences and things. And when I was 16 years old, the day I turned 16, I had my own car, which is not normal. Where we moved to, I was able to get driver's ed before I turned 16. And when I turned 16, I had my license. That day I had my own car. The car cost $500. If you hit the side of it, you could hear the rust fall out of it. But I started practice at 4:45 a.m. And so mom and dad said, that's really early. Okay. You get your car and you get to practice. And so the responsibility was they facilitated all of the means for me, but it was my responsibility to get there. And then the coaches demanded, you don't miss practice. You never miss practice. And so the combination of those two things, of the parents facilitating my ability to get to practice and the coach saying, you don't miss practice, then that was a successful combination of everybody working together. But it wasn't mom and dad, you know, doing everything for me. So the next one, this one's great. Telling people social media about their kids' swimming success only when they win. Personally, I don't think, I mean, it's great to post pictures or something like that, but I've learned from very, very smart people that you don't brag when you're up and you don't complain when you're down, because you're never as high as you think you should be, and you're never as down as bad as you can be. You know, so it's better just to either not say anything or just say, this is cool.
Yeah, this came from a conversation with a psychologist friend of mine, and he said, you know what? He said, you go on Facebook and really proud parents have done what they believe to be a beautiful thing, which is posting a photo. Here's Sally, just broke the state under 11 backstroke record, standing there with a medal. I'm so proud of her. Isn't she wonderful? That's great. We want to celebrate the successes of our kids. But here's the problem. Next meet, the kid comes second or doesn't get a medal, there's no photo. So the message to the child is, if you win, I recognize, I love you, I care about you, I'm going to tell everybody how amazing you are. If you come third by a tenth of a second, there's no photo. All right, so kid says, unless I win, I'm not loved. Unless I win, mum's not proud. And we all want our kids to win and be successful. I get all that, but they're not going to win all the time. Nobody does. Phelps, Ledecky, the greatest, nobody wins all the time. And if the only time you get excited and say to people, I'm really proud of my child, aren't they amazing, is when they win, the association is love equals win, failure equals nothing. Okay, I'm not going to try. It's too hard. Or I'm going to really try and become a perfectionist, which is not a good thing. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever tell me that perfectionism is a good thing where you're talking about kids. It's okay if you're building a Swiss watch. But when you're talking about kids swimming, perfectionism is not what we want. So don't expect it. Don't desire it. But so parents, if your child goes to a meet and they have a great day and they do their best and they're having a great time, get a couple of those photos. Hey, here's my child laughing their head off, sharing a joke with a teammate. Here's my child cheering for the team. Here's my child doing their absolute best. If you only show the medal shots, the association between winning is good and I'm loved and losing is bad and I'm not loved, creates an association that you just don't want. Because as my friend Psych said to me, and he said, you know, the problem is it goes from thinking I'm not a good swimmer to I'm not a good human being. Yeah. And then all the issues we know have got about anxiety, mood disorders, depression, all those things that we know our teenagers are going through, the last thing we want them thinking is I'm not a good person.
Man, that's deep. That is so good, Wayne. Expecting too much all the time, a PB every time you get in the water. I'll start this by saying, in the last, I think it was the last 4 years of my career, I did one best time. The last 4 years. Now, the thing is that when you're at the top of the game, you don't do best times a lot, but you still win meets. You still win a lot of meets. And so I still won a lot. But the best times, you want to get to the point in your career where the only thing that matters was what place you get, not what the time is. And so to really peak the best times, you can only pick certain times to do them. And if you expect every time that you jump in the water, you're going to do best time. Goodness, you've got, you know, that's maturation. You know, as soon as puberty hits, you're done.
Yeah, it's, is exactly true. That's the, and I, look, I think again, that's that, that a lot of it is parent expectation management. When I talk to coaches, say, when, if you go into a meet and you're in the middle of a hard work block, the expectation of the parents are, we're going to a meet, we've been working really hard because they can see how tired the kids are. Their expectation is, we're in great shape, we're going to race well, and we'll do a massive range of personal records, PBs, all the way through the meet. That's what they're expecting. They're telling everybody, it's going to be a great meet, we're in great shape, the kids have been working really hard. The coach goes, your kids are working really hard, we won't be doing a great meet because right. we're working so hard for the next meet.
They're tired.
Exactly. And so you've got expectation of swimmer is, I'll do my best, but I'm really tired. Coach's expectation is, we'll do our best, but we're really tired. Parents' expectation is, they're working really hard, they're going to win everything. And so after the meet, the parents are going, I'm really disappointed. They're sharing that with their kids. They're sharing it with other parents. It's because we didn't manage the expectations. So I say to coaches, you got a meet coming up in 2 weeks and you're working hard. Parent meeting, newsletters. So, hey, guys, we're going to this big meet and our focus is first 15 meters, the last 20 meters, and our turns. That's what I'm looking Goodness for. There gracious. Are my expectations.
Yeah.
And I need you to share in those expectations. If we get those things right, I'm going to be really happy because that's what the kids have been working on. You've got to manage expectations by telling them what your goals are way, way before, and then everybody's on the same page. If you don't manage that, coaches, the parents will expect PBs every time you go out. So get in front of that and educate the parents about what to expect.
That is absolutely right. Could you imagine going to a meet when your entire team and the goal of the entire team is to add 2 underwater dolphins off every turn?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're great.
Okay. So 90% of the athletes, when they do that, will not go faster. Okay. Especially for the first time. But you've now gamified, or you've given them a target. All right. And so everybody else looking around going, oh, they didn't go faster. But if they accomplish the 2 underwater dolphins, what do we know about the sport? Where are we going with the sport? We've talked about this before. So you're in a process and you're moving towards something. And so if it's just about PBs or something like that, you're not going to learn. I mean, you know, I get all these videos in from kids from all over the country in the app now. And I'm amazed to see a 3.5 yard breakout. I'm like, what do their coaches see at practice? And have they ever watched a swim meet of NCAAs or the Olympics or things like that? And again, not to necessarily get on the coaches and give the parents more power, but we all have to kind of look at it from a common sense standpoint and say, they're skill first, performance second. Skill first, performance second, especially when we're talking about young swimmers. So really quickly, let's make it real world situation, college scholarships. Here we are at Northwestern, very, very expensive. Rachel is recruiting one athlete. Here's what she's looking at. She's not the fastest swimmer. Progressive improvement.
Yes.
Okay. So the people that she's recruiting are progressively improving. They have not plateaued. They're not the fastest plateauing. They're going like this.
Great okay? strategy. Great you're strategy.
You're doing that at 16, 17 years old. Guess what? You got a future. You're doing this at 16, 17 years old. Guess what? You've been beaten to death probably. And the demands are too. And let me tell you something. Northwestern is not cheap. You want an education that's going to set you up for the rest of your life? Gradual improvement.
Yeah, that's a great, what a great strategy that to see improvement. Because you're dead right that we see a lot of PBs and a lot of improvement, 10, 11, 12, 13, because they're getting bigger. They're getting stronger. They're getting taller. The paddle's getting bigger. All those things. If you're showing consistent improvement, final 2 years of senior high, and then you're going, hey, this kid is still got room. They're still improving right. and they're learning. And a lot of it will be skills-based.
I've said for years, I think one of the toughest things to do is take an age group swimmer and not make them faster.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you just teach them, they're going to go faster because they get bigger. It's just the question is, how fast do you want them to get fast? And the faster you want them to get fast, the less chance they have of getting fast because they don't learn the skills. They don't love the sport. They're getting beat down by trying to get performance too soon. Slow down. Stop. Think, I'm going to erase this right there. Get PBs out of your mind. Get skill, smiles, and gradual improvement. That's it.
Yeah. And I was talking to a friend of mine who teaches music, Millsy, and he said, he was talking about it. He said, you've got to teach, you teach piano in his case, so they can do it really well. You don't teach them really well and the next day put them in front of a large audience or put them in a situation where it's really important. He said, so you do it and they might play for their family or to the other people in the class. Then they might do it at a slightly bigger concert, then with a better piano, and you build and build. And eventually, if they keep doing that and improving bit by bit by bit, that they might become a concert pianist, he said. But he said that even with him, he said, the biggest problem is parents hear them play a very simple song, a tic-tac-toe type song, and they go, they're one step away from performing in Carnegie Hall. And he said the process is gradual, systematic improvement of that simple skill, but over a long period of time. And if music teachers tell us that, dance teachers, rugby coaches, that we know that these are universal truths for the parents of kids who swim.
You have no idea how close to home you're hitting on this thing. Okay. So my 91-year-old mom lives here with us. I have a 10-year-old daughter. My 10-year-old daughter sings. Okay. And I've heard the word perfect more than I've wanted to. Okay. Now, again, we're talking old school. She's 90. Yeah. My mom's 91. She is a music teacher. She sang in the Cleveland Orchestra Chorus for 25 years. She sang at Carnegie Hall 5 times.
Wow.
How do you get there? You got to be perfect because you have to blend in with the chorus. Your notes have to be perfect. So there are things where you are striving for the perfection of what you're asked to do because you have to blend in with 200 other people. But when you're talking to a 10-year-old, once you start to put the layer of perfection on there, the demands are so great that the enjoyment goes away. And so exactly. this is what I deal with all the time because I'm dealing with my mom who has this way of learning and I'm dealing with a 10-year-old that just wants to be happy. And so we're working through it, but that is from a music standpoint, yes. And I had a conversation with the diving coach at Northwestern the other day, and I did start to understand the pursuit of perfection, because what do you want when you dive? You want a 10. Okay. So I know that there are certain things that you would want that in. There's no perfect swimming race.
No. Because there's so many factors, isn't there? There's
so many factors.
Yeah. And, you know, again, I used to say to parents, particularly in triathlon, that their kids were doing really well at 12. And you'd say, well, the statistics are the age of athletes who are winning at international level in triathlon is usually mid-20s and up. Every so often there's someone who's a little different. You get some exceptionally talented kids. But most of the time at those big ITU events, the longer events, Olympic Games, the athletes who are winning in triathlon are mid-20s and up. Your kid's 12. That's 13 years of progressive improvement that you need to be thinking in place to get where they need to go. The fact that they're winning now is not that relevant. It's can we logically, systematically improve them over 13 years so that they're still getting better and hitting their absolute peak when we know they're going to need to. And you try to have these conversations with parents, which, again, sounds like common sense, but that wonderful phrase, mate, thing about common sense, it's just not that common.
So along these lines, and we're on pace right now to do a 4-hour podcast. So we've got but really quickly, because you talked about triathlon, I was asked to work with Project Podium, the U.S. Olympic Development Group. And I just got a text in today from the elite coach. If we show this really quickly, They just had a race and they locked out the podium with these three guys. This the first guy is an Olympian and these two are trying to be an Olympian.
Very cool.
And so they won 2-3 at their last race. And this just came in today from Ryan. Now, here's the thing. When I started working with him, they said you have either 4 or 8 years to help these athletes. This is not about next year. This is so we started before Tokyo. And so now we're 4.5, 5 years into it, and then 9 years. So the patience on this end, this is starting to happen now because everybody understood that it takes time. So you got a 12-year-old triathlete that's great. They're not in this picture. I'm sorry. You know, there are the outliers, but these are the guys that spent years and years and years working the trenches on their way up. Let's go to the last one on the five biggest mistakes. Talking to your swimmers at home, in the car, in front of TV, over meals, talking swimming everywhere.
Yeah, they've got to switch off. Swimming isn't who they are. It's what they do, but they also do music. They play chess. They hang out with their friends. They go to the movies. They play baseball. They have some hoops with their buddies. They've got a part-time job. They've got a lot of things in their life. The last thing that swimmers want is to be having breakfast, about to put a nice big piece of nice spoonful of cereal in their mouth, and someone across the table, mum or dad, says, "Hey, I've been thinking about your breaststroke from the last meet." And I've got the particularly with teenagers, the fastest way to have them drop out is to not give them space and give them time to just be kids. And I know why parents do it. They see it. They've read something. They've Googled what maybe Bob Bowman has said on TV or something like that. They want to help. I get it, but you're not helping. That as soon as I normally have what I call the car rule, as soon as you get in the car and the law is here, seatbelts, as soon as you get in the car, there is no swimming. That's it. Leave it. If the child says to you, "Hey, Mom, I've got a question," or "Mom, I want to talk to you about," that's different. But as soon as you get in the car, that's a no swimming zone until the next time they get out of the car at the next practice. So there's a no swimming zone in the car, no swimming zone in the garage, no swimming zone at home. It's a no swimming zone. That's, you've got to have that ability to see your child for who they are and not for what they do. So no swimming zones, very important.
Very good. So let's move on to something a little bit more positive, top five swimming parent tips. So I'm just going to let these roll at the bottom. So the first one, love your child for who they are.
Yeah, really important. That one of the most important things, the greatest gift you can give your child is for them to lay in bed at night and go, "Gee, my mum and dad, my grandparents, whoever's raising you." So lie in bed and go, "Man, I'm loved. They just love me, not the backstroker or the great student at school or the great hockey player. You know, they love me because I'm me." The confidence, the internal strength, the just the beauty that is to have somebody in your world who loves you for who you are is just a wonderful gift. And quite often, certainly with kids 10 years and under, you're the only person in the world that can give them that. And it's a beautiful gift. It's a prize. It's something to be highly valued because of the courage and the strength, the resilience and the peace that it gives them knowing those things. And you might be the only people in the world who can give that to them. Make sure that's your primary focus as they go to sleep at night. I'm loved for who I am. I win, I lose, it doesn't matter to those people in that other room. They love me for me. Very important.
Right. No, very good. Next one, do nothing for them. Help them build important capabilities like independence, self-responsibility, and self-accountability. I mean, this is so key. Here's what I can tell you. And we're, you know, I have older kids and now I have a younger one as well. And so I learned a lot the first time around. So with that said, Madison does her own laundry at 10 years old. Okay. That's just an indication of where we go with things. That, you know, if she wants to wear dirty clothes to school, that's up to her. And we do encourage her to make sure that she wears clean clothes to school. However, making the bed, the basic sort of expectations of people, Ordering dinner for herself when we go out to a restaurant. You know, we want her to have that voice and to understand how to talk to people and interact. And so these are the little things that we do as parents that we feel help her become her rather than a reflection of us, if that makes sense.
It does. And you're doing the right thing, Millsy. I say that to parents all the time. A parent said to me once, we were talking funny enough about a 10-year-old girl, and I said, 10-year-old girl should be stacking the dishwasher, setting the table, learning to cook some basic meals, like obviously within safety, you know, we're going to get them to do it that's with big sharp knives and things, but just, you know, learning to boil an egg, learning to pour some cereal, learning to boil pasta and mix a sauce in it with some chopped vegetable, basic things. And she said, oh, you know, she's only 10 though. And I said, answer me this, how many buttons does she press a day? And she'll I say, think about it, phone, TV, computer, thousands and thousands of buttons. And what? Tell me about a school bag. How heavy? Oh, I can barely pick up a school bag. So you're telling me she presses thousands and thousands of buttons a day. She carries a big, heavy bag. So you're really telling me she can't carry a clothes hamper into the washing machine and go power on, start cycle. Are you really? Why? The reason she doesn't is that you've said, I'll do it, because you need to feel that you're doing something of real substance to show the love you have for her, but you're not helping her and you're not helping us as coaches, because we need to see kids independent. It's so important.
Absolutely. Along those lines, I'm going to share another screen really quick. So this is Madison cooking. So she does have, she has done, I don't know, 10 or 15 cooking videos on online that we kind of put together. It's more fun. It's not, there's no ads or anything on it or anything like that. But the idea of teaching someone how to sustain for themselves is one of those things that we felt was very important. And so teaching her how to cook and create her own meals is something that, you know,
it's great.
Again, no, it's just, and the thing is that it's so simple, but it takes the responsibility off us and puts the responsibility on her. I know we want to take care of them all the time, but she feels more proud of herself when she does these things. There's a sense of accomplishment, you know, so.
Although I've got to say that if I saw her walking down the street next to you, I'd probably make the assumption that your wife must be gorgeous.
There you go. I without a doubt. Without a doubt. So we know how it works, you know. All right.
I've
next
seen
one.
That look myself many friends. They look at my kids, they look at me and go, oh, well, mother must be good looking.
That's exactly it. So somebody said, your daughter looks like you. And I said, does she have the same beard? That's not good. It's not good. The next one, be their rock no matter what happens, swimming fast or slow. Goodness gracious, absolutely. The performance should not matter in any way, shape, or form. It's, you know, my saying is the only thing a parent should say to an athlete after they get done is, I love to watch you swim.
I love watching you swim. Perfect. And this is a story that I've told to parents going to meets. They'll say they're like waves. They swim well, they feel good, they swim poorly or less than they expected, they swim bad. Their whole day is waves, they're up and down. When they come back to see you, when they come back to see the coach, when they come back to the team, we have to be their rocks. We've got to look at them and go, hey, they didn't meet the expectation they set for themselves. We still love them. They're still our friends. They're still wonderful. And we love them being part of this team. Doesn't make any difference. And they come in, and I say to parents, I know it's tough. I know you get disappointed and frustrated and angry and excited, but particularly around meets, they swim fast. We love them. We give them a hug. We get pizza on the way home. They swim slow. We give them a hug. We tell them we love them. We get pizza on the way home. Makes no difference. They've got to know. They've got to feel safe to fail. They got to feel that I'm going to give my best, absolute best, and there's no fear. I'm not afraid to fail. Because the thing that really matters, which is my relationship with my mom and dad, that's intact. It won't make a difference. I can go out and try something really wacky like 100 underwater kicks, and I can fail, and it's not going to make any difference. It makes me swim slow, but it makes no difference to the relationships that matter to me. Incredible lesson for all parents to know. Be their rock, because they're waves.
Wow. Yeah. Beautiful. Support your child's coach. Here you go. If you can't support them, arrange to meet with them and express your views. So rather than compiling a report on them without saying anything to them, I mean, this is the crazy thing. I do get this a lot on, I run a subscription-based website, and we're very good as far as what's called chargebacks, okay?
Yeah.
Which is when someone doesn't realize that the subscription has renewed, and so they call their bank up and say, this is fraud, you know, go after this company and get my money back. I have to be honest, maybe in 22 years, maybe 20 times, okay? Because when someone writes in and they say, look, I forgot this was renewing, can you take care of it? I take care of it, okay? So it's the same sort of thing here, that if you have a problem with your coach, don't write it down. Don't talk to somebody else. Go to the coach. Go directly to the source. Yeah. And chances are it's going to get taken care of like that. And if it doesn't, guess what? Okay, I'm going to have to whisper this and make sure nobody's looking. There's probably another team close by that you can go to. You don't have to make this one fit into your mold. Go somewhere else. People switch teams all the time. And so not every coach and every parent are going to mesh perfectly. And just because it's the most convenient one to you, don't try to change that coach to meet your image of what the coach should be. The coach is who the coach is. Let them do their job. If they fit with your kid, fantastic. If they don't, go find another team.
And Millsy, parents are entitled to express their views and their thoughts.
Absolutely.
And concerns. Of course they are. They're paying for a service. The pressure on coaches everywhere around the world is enormous anyway. But I try to say to parents, look, in any given situation, you've got three choices. You accept it, you change it, or you leave it. So yeah. The first thing is I'm going, you know, hey, that coach didn't give my child a lot of individual attention today. Do I accept it? Most of the time you go, well, yeah, but actually last week we got one-on-one. Okay, if you can't accept it, if you've actually gone, no, I think there's something that I'm not happy with, the next step is, can I change it, or can I change the way I look at it? So if you go, I've got to talk to the coach. All right. You ring the coach. You send them an email, send an appointment, say, can I make an appointment, have a coffee with you? There's a couple of things I'd like to discuss, like you would with any other professional. Can I talk about this? Sit down and say, hey, I'm just a bit confused. This is what I'm seeing. Coach explains, goes backwards and forwards. If you can't change it and you're still unhappy, then you leave. That's the three-step process, is to go through. Can I accept it? Look, really. Doesn't really matter that much, or I want to do something. Step two, can I change it? I'm going to meet with the coach, express my views, have a respectful conversation both ways. The worst things that parents will do is tell their kids, hey, your coach is useless, man. Your coach doesn't know how to coach butterfly. So that the kid then, who I'm trying to build a relationship with to help them be all they choose to be, says, you know, maybe I'm a bit confused. Maybe I don't like this. Maybe I don't trust this coach. Mum and dad certainly don't like them. So I've got no chance of building the relationship that I need to help them be remarkable. That's a toxic way of doing it. And the other way is sit in the stands and go, yeah, this Glenn Mills guy, he knows nothing. He's useless. Mm-hmm. I don't like him. My kids are getting worse. There's another team. That is, I call it, it's a cancer in swim teams. Yep. Is parents sitting there speaking poorly about the coach and having other parents go, yeah, maybe you're right. My kid hasn't done a PB for a week. Clearly, the coach is no good. So parents, please, as you would with any other relationship, make an appointment, have a coffee, have a beer, sit out in the car park away from your kids. It's a adult-to-adult discussion. Express your concerns honestly and respectfully, and you can't come up with a resolution, then it's time to go somewhere else.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the thing. Just be open and honest with the person. You know, again, the coach isn't always right. The parent isn't always right. the parent is going to have a much more, a deeper feeling of responsibility, of caring and everything about that swimmer than the coach will. Coaches think they care deeply about the swimmers. You're never going to care as deeply as the parent does. Okay. So sure. Just put it there. Okay. But when those two things are not aligned, if the coach and the parent don't communicate, then you will have conflict. You will guaranteed have conflict, or there's antagonism being built up. And like you said, there's no way that the swimmer is going to have the confidence in the coach if every time they get out of practice, they hear that coach is horrible. Okay. Yeah, so true. Make your life easy. Find another team. Like I said, it's very difficult to take a coach and shape the coach around one athlete. They're going to have a philosophy of coaching. And so if your athlete is an outlier, either really good or not so good, one way or another, sometimes it's better to find a program that suits that better. It might mean some extra travel time. You know, it might not be the most convenient, but that's the way life is. So there's no easy answer for this when you don't get along with your coach, but you have to find a solution as the parent, in my opinion.
With communication. Just sit down and have a conversation. And I find in that situation, that's what coaches want, because they know how badly the culture of the team erodes if you don't have upfront, honest, direct communication.
And the other thing, do respect what the coach is going through and what the coach does. That they are in this because they've chosen to do it. They're not forced into it. And so they want to be a great coach. Most people want to be very good in what they do. And so suggestions, conversations, a rational together, you know, just talk about what you feel is wrong or what can be done can actually make the coach better, because this is not going to be the last time that that coach is going to go through this situation. Because here's the thing, swimmers and parents, you have one career, unless you have multiple kids. This is it. This is all you got. And so if you have all this conflict, leave, talk to the coach or find another place, go somewhere. This is your only shot. Coaches will have thousands of swimmers go through the process. Okay. And so if you can adapt the coach and teach them a little bit through conversations, not through threats or accusations, then you can help guide that coach to be a better coach through the process, because there will be kids like your kid that come along after them.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's a long journey. Speaking of which, enjoy it. Okay. The smiling parent exercise.
Yeah, this is one I love to do when I do my parents' seminars in different places around the world. I ask the parents, I say, I want you to close your eyes, take some deep breaths. And I say, imagine you're in a time machine. The time machine has gone 20 years into the future. And you're walking down the street, and coming in the opposite direction is your child 20 years older than they are now. So your child's 12. Coming in the opposite direction is your 32-year-old child. And I let the parents, they're thinking, they're breathing, and I say, tell me what you want to see. Tell me what you're seeing. And every parent in the room will say something like happy, smiling, healthy, grandchildren, looking at me with love. Nobody says an Olympic gold medal around the neck. No one says a great set of abs and a six-pack. No one says they got out of a Ferrari. No one says they're walking in carrying a degree from Harvard. Nobody says anything to do with their achievements. The first thing every parent in the world, and I've done that exercise, man, in Johannesburg in South Africa. I've done it in Greece. I've done it in Ireland. I've done it in New Zealand. I've done it in Texas. Every time I do that session, the smiling parent exercise, and I get the parents and I say, okay, guys, open your eyes. Tell me what you saw. They were smiling. They were happy. Their eyes were full of love. They were healthy. And they had a couple of grandkids who were looking at me also with the same set of eyes. I said, okay, think about that for a moment. It's telling you, you already know what you're supposed to be doing, what we've got to do as parents. Healthy, happy, well-being, family. That's the big secret. That's what this is all about. It isn't about swimming fast. If you put your parent brain on for 5 minutes, remove your swimming parent brain. Your parent brain knows what you're supposed to do while you're a swimming parent, which is, can I make it fun? Can I make it so they want to be swimming a long, long time in the future? Can I make it so they stay healthy and well? Can I make sure our relationships are strong? You know all this stuff. And unfortunately, it gets clouded with some of the things we've talked about today, with obsession with winning or obsession with medals or expecting that kids will always get better. Focus on being a great parent. Think about the smiling parent exercise. Focus on those things and you'll be fine. You'll do a great job as a swimming parent.
I mean, we talked last year on the first part, I can't remember what episode it was, about seeing someone 5 years and 10 years ahead, you know, thinking of the sport, where it's going to be in 10 years and how do I coach my athletes to that? I mean, this is tremendous because I do have 31-year-old children and they're adults. They have their own lives and everything. And nothing makes me happier than the hugs that I get from them.
Yeah.
Okay. And so to know that they love me, and that we can talk about things and then I can experience and enjoy their lives that they're going through at this point. And then looking at Maddie, the 10-year-old, and thinking, what is she going to be at 31? You know, how is she going to go on this process? And then how is she going to look at me at that point? That is one of the most important things. And I've been fortunate enough to go through this twice. And it is a big experience, you know, having kids that are 20 years apart, but I get to see it again and understand the mistakes I made the first time through. And my son and I have talked about it. My son and Rachel have talked about it, about how the second time through you're better. And so if you can imagine that this was your second time, you know, and it's hard to until you've been there. But like what you're saying, it's so important to try to see. I get to see 20 years into the future because I've been there. And I'm telling you what's important. And it's not my son running in his soccer games and things like that. I mean, they were cool. My daughter's art shows and being on stage and her singing, that was cool. But the thing is, are they happy now? That's all I care about.
Yeah, it's true. And you've had a great opportunity to see it and learn from it. I think quite often, mate, as you and I know, that we're dealing with parents who are first-timers. And they love their child more than they want their next breath. The love that they have for a child is something that's difficult to express in any way, in writing form, in verbal. It's very hard to even talk about the intensity and the depth and the strength of the love you feel for your kids. Completely get it. And it's natural when they see them in the pool, they go, I really want them to be successful. I love them so much. I want them to be all that they want to be. I get it. And in that environment as a first-time parent, you go, I've got to make sure the coaching's really good. I've got to make sure they're eating the right foods. I've got to make, because you want to help. No, parents are not doing anything wrong. They're just expressing their love in an inappropriate way in that setting. And I think, you know, so, I mean, this chat's got a lot longer than we maybe planned, but this is an important issue because every child who's in our sport anywhere in the world, let's say most of them, have got a parent, a carer, a grandparent, somebody who's going through how to be a great swimming parent. For every swimmer, there's at least one carer or one parent. So you're talking millions of people around the world are trying to figure out how to be a great swimming parent. Now, I think we've gone a pretty good job today trying to answer it with some genuine tips, but also sharing some of the heartaches and pains that we've both been through.
Yeah, no, totally. It's, I mean, we could do a whole nother hour on this. We just broke the hour mark right now, and our goal was under. So I think we did good. I don't know. I guess we'll find out. But other than that, I think that the overall message that we tried to get across today, love your kids no matter what. And that's the most important thing. But all right, man, I will see you next week. I will talk to you later. And don't forget, all of this great stuff is on Wayne's website, and we're going to make sure that we put the link in and we'll get that taken care of.
Fantastic, my friend. Have a wonderful week.
Thank you. You too, Wayne. Bye.
See ya.